all the departments in the mercy of God. Rest in peace.
A few sounds from the funeral of George and Shirley Brickenden. Through nearly 73 years of marriage, George and Shirley had done nearly everything together, and on March 27th of this year, they died together at the Toronto Retirement Home, holding hands. They became one of the very few couples in Canada to have chosen and to have been granted permission to die together with medical assistance. Their story highlights many of the ethical and practical challenges as this country comes to terms with medically assisted dying. To find out more about the Brickendens' choice, I'm joined by three of their children, Pamela Brickenden, Sax Brickenden, and Angela Coulterjohn. They're with me in our Toronto studio. Hello to you all.
Good morning.
First of all, help us understand who your parents were. How would you describe their life together? Sax.
Well, it was magic. It was the quintessential love story. My father was set up by his mother, who was a playwright and an actor, and she was producing a play in Halifax when my father's ship came in. He was a sub-lieutenant in the Navy. And he was only in for a few days, and so I guess Grandma was booking him appointments. It's amazing. And my mother had initially said, oh, no, I'm engaged to another man. But when Grandma pulled his picture out, she went, well, maybe, okay. So it was at war. Anyway, within 6 days, my father proposed. And my mother accepted. So that was in itself astonishing. I can't believe every one of those days has translated into over a decade of very happy marriage. They were awesome.
Pamela, when you remember them growing up, what do you remember?
Laughing.
Yeah, I was going to say the same thing.
Laughing. The dad was dry, slightly twisted, hilarious. And he'd get up and act out and jump on the furniture and just all my life just laughing.
Angela?
I would say the same. As a child, I'd go to sleep at night and I'd hear them laughing. They'd have friends over. It was just a very happy childhood. And I feel a great deal of gratitude for that. Also, their values they instilled upon us, I think, were invaluable. Their sense of morality, they were very devoted and dedicated to one another and to us.
And so they were in their 90s. What was their life like in recent years?
They were functional, but they became more and more sick with various ailments, some definitely life-threatening in both cases. My mom has had rheumatoid and osteoarthritis for decades.
50 years. Yeah.
And her hands were, when it flared up, like purple claws. She couldn't do up her buttons or zippers. She couldn't eat properly with a knife and fork. And my father was so sweet. He'd anticipate her needs and do up the buttons for her and do up her pants for her. He said he'd prefer to undo them, but... And she had significant heart issues. And then he went downhill in the last couple of years and his heart became a real problem. So he became very fragile.
So their life together really is a life that most people dream of. Why did they want to die? Why did they want to control when they died?
Well, they were both in significant pain for different reasons. And with their heart problems, both of them had heart problems, they had both nearly died several times. And I'm convinced that, for instance, in January when my dad, we thought he had a heart attack, it turned out to be a severe case of influenza, 104 temperature, and old people die from influenza. I'm convinced, and we're all convinced, that he tried to stay alive because my mom was in rehabilitation for her hip that she'd just broken. He wanted to stay alive to be with her. She wanted to get out of the rehabilitation to be with him so they could be together. And last year when mom had a year and a half ago, her heart attack, she thought she was dying.
It was a year ago.
Okay, it's a year. And she said, she told us, she said in her head, I cannot die. I cannot leave George. I cannot leave George. And I swear that they were hanging on for each other.
Absolutely. 100%. You could see the sheer will. And these were very determined people. I mean, they were both war vets. My mom was in the Air Force, in Eastern Air Command. And you can see the determination to be together. They weren't going to leave the other one behind. So it was like mind over body, absolutely.
I saw it numerous times.
Mm-hmm.
How long had they talked about assisted death as an option?
40 years?
Yeah, about four decades.
Yeah, is that right?
My mother would casually say, well, when we fly away together, we're going to do this and we're going to do that and leave this to so-and-so. And so they referred to it as always flying away together. And I used to think as the cynic, you know, the teenage cynic, I thought, right, sure, you're going to fly away together. You know, the laws aren't going to allow that to happen. So it astonished me that the Supreme Court adjusted the laws in 2015 and that right on cue when mom and dad's health was just on last legs, that the doors opened up and allowed them to do this. And thanks to Dying with Dignity, who really helped us through all of this stuff.
When did they first start to take serious steps then toward arranging their deaths?
18 months ago?
Yeah, 18 months ago.
Mom applied and they had a battery of doctors interview her and she was approved quite quickly. And my dad was still pretty robust, and so he was not approved, which demonstrates that these safety guards are working. And then when his health went really downhill in November and January, as I mentioned, he did qualify. But really seriously, about 18 months ago, had to have huge determination and tenacity, which my parents have. And they were really excited when they found out they both got approved.
Yeah, the safeguards are many layers. There's also one that makes sure you're compos mentis. And my father, because he's a bit of a joker, a couple of times, he answered questions where they would throw a phrase at him like people in glass houses. And instead of saying shouldn't throw stones, he said shouldn't walk around naked.
Or shouldn't live in glass houses.
And so that was a fail, And then mom had to chew him out and say, will you stop that? These are serious questions, so...
But there was a period of time when your father was wasn't approved, mm-hmm. And how did your mother react to that?
She was pretty worried.
Oh yeah, they were both worried.
Yeah, they're both worried. It was every single day they woke up, they said, and worried, is today the day one of us is going to leave the other? And that was the most terrifying thing. They weren't depressed. It wasn't that they were depressed and wanted to end it all. They just didn't want to live without the other. They were one organism with two heads.
And in pain.
And constant pain for decades. So when people say, it's as though they're trivializing it or treating this whole issue as a cavalier thing. It was a long-term decision. They worked hard. They were tenacious. The safeguards were in place. They didn't make it easy. The worst thing, worse than losing two parents at the same time, is losing one and having to watch the other try to cope. That would be heartbreaking.
Yeah, absolutely. In their case particularly.
And they were very stoic, too. They didn't complain. I mean, mom's hands were so mangled, and she would always wave her hands around when she was speaking and gesticulate. But she never complained about it. When you just look at the hands, you realize that's got to be very uncomfortable. And dad didn't complain, although he'd been crushed by a horse in an equestrian competition, pre-Olympic training. And they had to shoot the horse, and his lower back was fused, and they said he'd never walk again. And then they started doing yoga together, and soon he was walking, and then running, and then back on a horse. They were very determined people, and this was something they wanted.
But he had pain for 70 years. She had pain for 50.
Yeah.
And you can't judge another person's pain, but you really should walk in someone else's shoes, because I've had the kind of pain where you will do anything to get away from it, and this is what they were going through.
Mm-hmm. But his pain was not deemed worthy of approval at first,
no,
right?
He
ended up with a heart attack after his health went downhill.
Yeah, it wasn't so much his pain. It was him collapsing and going unconscious on the floor that drew their attention to the situation. I mean, his heart was stopping.
How well do you think the system worked for your parents?
I think it worked perfectly for them, except that, I think it's fair that we need to protect the vulnerable in our society. So we do need these safeguards. It was a bit scary, and I'm sure, mom and dad would have preferred it were easier. But I think in balance, the laws are really well thought out.
Do you think anything can be improved in this system?
Well, listening to Dr. Chantal Perrault speaking to the parliamentary committee a couple of weeks ago, she was talking about, this such an abundance of caution. And doctors are afraid to be involved in this because of the potential legalities, litigation. So it's new to Canada. And I think it's going to take a little bit of time for people to adjust. So on one hand, I think it should be a little more accessible. But on the other hand, I agree it should also have all these stringent safeguards.
So and I think the society has to adjust how we think about this issue as well, because Mom and Dad had to be very surreptitious for a bit there, because even when we had to call in, the coroner's office, there were two bodies.
Yeah.
And when Humphrey Funeral Home came to pick up the bodies, why are there two bodies? It sounds like it's a homicide or something. And interestingly, when they walked into the room to take them away, they both came out with tears in their eyes. They were crying, which, of course, made us all break down because they'd never seen anything like this. They could barely get the hands apart.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they were holding hands.
Yeah.
And smiling, by the way.
To the very end.
To the end.
Yeah. Were you there? Were you in the room?
We had our arms around each other. Angela was rubbing Mum's feet because we love that sort of thing. And I was rubbing Dad's. We were standing at the foot of the bed. And there was no fear. There was no hesitation. They embraced this process and they looked at each other. Mm-hmm. The last thing Dad said was, "I love you all." That's a pretty good, that tells you a lot.
Did you get any sense at all that they had any doubts at any time about
Never,
their
ever,
decision?
Never.
Not
ever.
Once.
And
not
what,
once.
What about you guys? Did you ever argue it with them?
Never. Or?
I don't think we argued it. I've never heard an argument about it, except that the only thing I was reticent about was actually being present for their death.
Yeah, I'm not sure.
I thought that was very intimate. I thought that's something they'd want to do together. But at the last minute, they said, you know what? We want the kids in. So
I'm glad we were there.
I'm glad we were there as well in hindsight. But, before the time, I thought, I don't think I could do that.
They helped us into the world. We should help them out of
that's
it.
That's fair. Hmm. Yeah.
What has the conversation been like amongst you guys then as this whole process was unfolding? What kinds of things did you talk about in anticipation of what was going on with your parents?
In anticipation?
Like knowing that they had a date.
We had, Mom and I, and I guess all of us, had conversations that were surreal, where you'd say, okay, if we can't get the authorization from Dying with Dignity or MAIDE, medical assistance in death, then we're going to do it ourselves. We're going. So do we do carbon monoxide? We slit our wrists? How do you do it? What's the right way? They read all the books, Final Exit. They read a book on what pill to take. But then do you regurgitate? And then do you end up? So I believe in Dying with Dignity if you're at that point, because it's better than a botched suicide.
Absolutely.
And they were going. They weren't depressed. They just had enough. They were exhausted.
They were going into emerge three times a week sometimes.
It's their natural habitat.
But it's like that case that we read about recently. I think it was the doctor whose parents committed suicide because they couldn't get approval. And the children were shattered because they weren't prepared. They
didn't
have
what
we had, which was fantastic quality time.
Yeah,
we really had all of our family flew from around the world, Norway, Switzerland, Scotland,
Vietnam,
Vancouver, to be together, and we had 22 of us.
Yeah.
Tell me a little bit more. Did everyone know in the wider family, or was this when everybody got together?
It was the immediate family to begin with, and our kids had heard them talk freely about flying together, and then a little bit about Dying with Dignity, and again with a little skepticism. Mm-hmm. And then for me, I have four kids; they're older. I called them, called my daughter in Scotland, and said, "So, Annabelle, Papa and Gang Gang have a date. They've been approved." There was silence. And I said, "Do you want to know that date or do you want to know after?" And she said, "I want to know the date. I want to come home right now."
Yeah.
All of my three boys, same thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Your two boys.
Yeah, my two guys, when I told them, there was that moment. And then they reflected on overhearing Mom and Dad talk about this.
Yeah.
And take a deep breath and said, "Okay, I'm getting on a plane." My son Cam was in Vancouver, he and his fiance, and my son Matt was in Vietnam. And they immediately said,
"Immediately." And so we rallied together, and Mom and Dad are very private people, so they didn't tell very many people. Plus, this was going to happen in the retirement home. They weren't so sure how that would go over. So we were all sworn to secrecy.
Yeah.
And in fact, the only reason they went public with this at all is to hopefully facilitate or help others in Canada get access to this option.
Yeah.
If you don't like it, don't do it. But at least if people want to have this option, it's nice to have it more accessible.
Right.
So tell me what their final days together were like.
Well, they were relieved.
Fun.
They were relieved. There was a lightness that hadn't been there in a year and a half.
You could hear Dad in the other room. He'd be humming and singing.
Absolutely.
And making unsuitable jokes.
Yeah. He said, "All this funeral planning is killing me."
Yeah. It's like... There was a meeting with the two doctors prior to, obviously, and at one point, Dad, in the middle of the conversation, just got up and lay down on the floor. And my mom said, "Rick, what are you doing? And he said, "Practicing." So, I mean, yeah, there was a dark humor, but there was humor. And that, I think, made it easier for all of us.
Going to Humphrey's with Mom and Dad was very strange. Mm-hmm. To the funeral home, walking in, and I was feeling very weird about it. And we walked in and said, "Yeah, we're planning a funeral." And they're like, "Yeah, that's normal. Your parents are old." And I said, "It's for actually... The Monday after next." Oh, but they had to be, obviously they couldn't tell anybody. But that was a weird experience. But strangely comforting to plan their funeral with them. Mm-hmm. Plus we knew we wouldn't get in trouble if we messed up.
Right.
So the actual, their deaths, it was in the evening, am I right?
7 o'clock.
Yeah,
okay,
7 o'clock.
So talk to me a little bit about that evening. Can you tell me what was it like in the room? What was the mood? What were you thinking? Take me through that.
Well, Dean Asbill was there from St. James Cathedral to read them their last rites, and that meant a lot to them. They were both religious. I always thought my mother a bit more so than my father, but I think it really gave him a lot of comfort to have the dean there. Yep. And then the two doctors, and that was surreal too. As Angela said, the whole experience was surreal. But to sit and be having, the doctors didn't drink, needless to say, but
we had champagne
and toasted their life. And then Mom said, "Well, Brick, are you ready?" And he said, "Whenever you are." And they walked into the
And that was at 6:45. I thought they had 15 more minutes. Sure you want to go right now? You still have a little more time.
Yeah.
They were, as Sack said, they had deep faith. And I asked Mom about that. And I said, how are you dealing with that aspect of this decision? You're taking, essentially, you're agreeing to have someone assist you in dying. And she said, "I don't believe that God wants me to suffer like this anymore. I've had enough.
Good point.
I'm exhausted."
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Did she get any pushback from faith leaders?
In fact, my personal experience is I've had conversations with Buddhists, Muslims, Greek Orthodox, Anglican, Roman Catholic, agnostics, every possible Jewish, everything. And they've all said, "Wow, I mean, this is really amazing." And some people say, "I wouldn't do it myself, but I respect your right to choose."
Yeah.
It might not be right for me, but it's right for them.
I wanted to know the reaction you have been getting.
Unbelievably positive. Unbelievably positive.
Yeah, really overwhelmingly positive. I put a post up on Facebook and I did address that that this was, I had been skeptical about it and that there's a reason for the laws being there. We got 100%, it went viral, within a couple of days I had 120 reposts and over about 600 likes. And for me, that's a lot.
Huge comments.
Yeah. And very, very supportive comments and people, even people who had, watched their parents suffer, without this option and who said, "I really wish that we'd had this," which is really why I'm here and why we're here to honor Mom and Dad's wishes, because I don't think, the inadvertent side effect of the really tight laws was that we had nursing homes full of people who are drugged out of their minds, in pain and therefore drugged, and just being warehoused and not even recognizing sometimes they aren't who they were.
To add to your point, mm-hmm. I've spent 7 years. We have I have a dog who's a St. John Ambulance accredited dog, Stanley. He's very famous. And for 7 years, I've been going to a retirement home every Wednesday that I can. And there are several floors. Some are independent, some are not. And it happens so often that I'll talk to a resident and say, "Oh, see you next week." And they'll say, "You know what? I love you, Angela, but I hope not. My heart's been acting up. I hope not." The ones that can speak, then they're the ones that are totally paralyzed or don't know who they are, where they are laughing at the wall and running around with, scantily clad. It's a lot of those people that I've spoken to there don't want to be alive. And I don't know, they have to be, of course, sound mind to make the decision.
Yeah, that's the problem.
Every week.
But when it's not going to get better and you have no hope, and before you fall apart and lose all your dignity completely, and perhaps even damage some memories or your relationships, because some diseases make you lose your mind and become violent and aggressive.
Violent.
Yes.
Who wants that?
You know, there are Canadians who do have ethical and religious objections, and you made the point people can make their own decisions. But what do you say to those who worry that access to assisted dying, medically assisted dying, is too easy?
It's not. You have to have huge tenacity and determination. And some people don't have families to support them. And we didn't do anything, but we were there. And Mom was able-bodied enough to pursue it vigorously, rigorously.
And what do you say to those who, you talk about dignity in old age or in illness, and what do you say to those who react to what you say as suggesting that they don't have dignity? If they lose some of their physical abilities or their mental abilities, that we see them, those of us who are not in that position, we see them as losing a dignity, but maybe they haven't.
It's a choice.
I think it's a personal choice.
Yeah.
I don't think it's for everybody, and it shouldn't be, but it certainly didn't make it easy. And it's not a decision you come to with a cavalier last minute, oh, let's try this. This is a long,
journey.
Deeply ingrained conviction of theirs. These planets happened to align, and they were able to go together.
Yeah.
But to see them lying there together, looking adorable, holding hands, smiling at each other, no fear, no hesitation, and watching as they gently flew away together, I saw their faces, and the pain, the worry, the stress just melted away. It was a beautiful thing to see.
For them.
For them.
Yeah.
Not for everybody.
And I'm guessing that despite the fact that you are so supportive of that and you're able to talk about it so easily, there must be moments when it's really hard that you're mourning them, that you miss them.
But we have each other. They gave us each other, as Sachs says.
Yeah, and they were so central. They were still, very much in our day-to-day activities. We would call and touch base.
Oh, daily.
And,
multiple times.
And of course, there's a big hole there. But they've been preparing us for this for 40 years. And I hope that we can stimulate some conversation around the dinner table with what's going on.
Totally has happened. Mm-hmm. That's another thing I've heard from everybody I've talked to, that was the dinner topic, this conversation. Mm-hmm. People don't have it. So what Mom and Dad have done by going public with this is they've pulled this subject out of the shadows and made it topical and dinner table conversation. And hopefully that'll help others.
I'd like to emphasize that Mom and Dad, in fact, our whole family, tend to be very private. So for them to do this and say to us, you're going to get pushback. Are you ready? And we all said to a man, yes, we're ready. I find this process very stressful, being on the radio and so on, but I'm doing it because they wanted their deaths to matter, to count, to help other people who are suffering, to give them the option.
Well, I'm guessing that there are days when the emotions are hard, regardless of the fact that you approved of all of this and you wanted them to have their own choice.
But we have each other.
Someone you must miss them.
Yeah.
We do.
Well, they went at a time of their choosing, not when time chose them. I mean, that's different. And it's something that's going to take a long time to adjust to. I confess, I took an Ativan when I went to the funeral.
Me too.
Well, thank you for sharing your story and their story as well. Thank you.
Thanks, Anne-Marie.
Thank you for having us.
I've been speaking with Pamela Brickenden, Sachs Brickenden, and Angela Coulter-John. Their parents, George and Shirley, died together with medical assistance in March. Later this week, we will hear a different perspective on medically assisted dying from Ing Wong Ward. She's a former CBC journalist. She's now a disability rights activist who has a condition known as spinal muscular atrophy. Ing Wong Ward has been diagnosed with incurable colon cancer. She'll tell us why she would not choose to end her life with medical assistance. I'm Anna Maria Tremonti. Thanks for listening to The Current.